Welcome to the Autonicast. I'm Ed Niedermeyer, and I am backstage at Empire Garage at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. I'm joined, as always, by the lovely and talented and formidable Kirsten Korosek.
Hey. Alex is not here.
Alex is not here. Alex is actually currently mere feet from us, giving his famous presentation on universal basic mobility, which we have discussed many times on the show.
We're not going to discuss now.
We're not going to talk about that.
He swears a lot. Don't watch it.
Yeah. But we do have the previous panel here at the Ward's Intelligent Smart Mobility Summit. And as a panel on how robotaxis were going to transform urban transport. And so I'm going to have everyone here. We have a big group here. So pass the mics around, but go ahead and introduce yourself, starting right here.
Well, thanks for letting us join. My name is Ted Trepanier. I'm with a company called Inrix. We're a mobility data service company, which is a mouthful. So really, we just kind of sit in the middle connecting cars and cities and be that data transfer, turning data into information, aggregators and analytics.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here, really. My name is Ipek Shenar. I work at Texas A&M Transportation Institute as an associate research scientist. Most of the things that I do is focusing on travel demand modeling and activity travel behavior analysis. In its simpler form, I try to understand why people choose, what people choose and why. And trying to understand their choices. This is also the case for automation. What is their public acceptance, adoption for automated vehicles, for different levels of automation, and how that really impacts the travel behavior.
Manuela Papadopoul. I'm the CEO of Designated Driver, a startup that is building teleoperation solutions for vehicles, not just autonomous vehicles, but any vehicle, any level.
I'm John Susannis, Managing Director of Ward's Intelligence. We're presenting this conference today. We are a business intelligence company for and about the automotive mobility sector.
And I'm Finch Fulton, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Policy at the U.S. Department of Transportation. And we are here getting feedback on automated vehicle policy from the federal level and making sure that we get out of the beltway to hear what real people are doing, both in research and in use cases around automated vehicles.
So let's start with you, John. Sort of why have a panel on robotaxi specifically? I mean, I think autonomous vehicles clearly a topic a lot of people are interested in, but why robotaxis and why in urban environments specifically?
Well, that's a great question. I think even as we had the panel, it did veer a little from that because the interest just in autonomy in general is so great. But I do think there's a real case to be made that cities will be one of the first places to use it, although we talked about some other scenarios as well. But I think that's where a lot of the interest in changing the way we get around really is in the city. So I think we want to look at that hard.
This is Manuela. And we also talked about the benefit of having robo-taxis, not just for humans, for transporting humans, but for transporting goods. And we've also talked about how does the acceptance of and education of the drivers, the passengers, evolves around the robo-taxis. And when will we see robo-taxis on the road? Will we have teleoperators maneuver these vehicles in case a sensor fails or in case the AI is not sufficient in the car? So it was a great panel. I think we've touched on a lot of things.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I really liked, we are all coming from different backgrounds, and we really add one other point, and it's really great to start thinking all together collectively. I do feel that we really have this enormous opportunity to change everything because we have to start from scratch. We were at the point that we had too much hope from cars in 20th century when they were first introduced, and we became more car dependent as we move forward. So now we have really this unique opportunity because this future required to shape everything from the very beginning, and this will require really a very collective thought process. So I'm really excited to work all together with these experts from different perspectives to learn and to brainstorm, sometimes to agree, not to agree, but this will really lead us to a better environment, to a transportation environment, I believe.
Yeah, so our discussion had the question that you always hear when people are talking about autonomous vehicles or robo-taxis, and that is, if we introduce these cars on top of everything else that's going on, isn't congestion just going to get worse, right? And certainly if we introduce new technology without any policy, probably it's going to be some consequences that we don't want to see. But we also talked a lot about what the benefits are, right? And so we talked about accessibility and what those can bring to folks with impairments, access to suburban areas and how we can connect transit systems, where automated vehicles and robo-taxis kind of fit in the whole scheme of mobility on demand, right? Where you get presented with options and make choices. So when people ask the question, won't autonomous vehicles make congestion worse? The answer is always, it depends, right? It's going to be different by each city. It's going to be different by time of day. And it's going to be very different depending on what policies come along with the new technology.
And from our point of view at the Department of Transportation, we're really focusing on, when it comes to robo-taxis or automated vehicles and urban areas in particular, we really focus on providing choices and to make sure that those technologies can be proved to be safe so that we can get the benefits to safety, to accessibility, to the efficiency of the system as a whole. But we're not just focusing, from our point of view, at how we go through this process to provide greater choices around automated vehicles. We're also looking at drones and other new innovative technologies for moving people and goods, and that leads me to plug Secretary Chao's speech on Tuesday morning, where she's going to be talking through how the Department of Transportation is moving forward on some of these new options that could, if the technology works out, dramatically improve the efficiency of the system and reduce congestion.
Is there too much emphasis on the taxi part of this? Because I mean, I think, you know, sometimes if you look at the business model, right, and maybe there's a consumer choice question here too. It seems to me that the difference between getting in a taxi with a human driver versus not, I mean, you can just sort of tell your driver, hey, I don't really want to talk, and you might as well be in an autonomous vehicle, right? I mean, maybe without the safety benefits, obviously, but from a consumer experience, you know, there's some question about whether that's a really fundamental difference. Whereas in commercial delivery, right, you have tough economics, right? And you have shortages of drivers, and you have all these other things that are real, like, business issues. Is commercial space, like, kind of where this will happen first or not?
Well, I will first respond from a consumer choice perspective. So this is actually something that I was talking during the panel as well. One of the studies that we have conducted was looking for if ride-hailing users will be the early adopters. That there is that hypothesis because of their early adoption of technology, and this can be any technology. And our study has shown significantly that ride-hailing users might be the early adopters of automated vehicles as in the form of mobility services. But the difference was interesting because when we asked them about the shared ride-hailing services, about the pooled version, they were kind of hesitant to tell that, yes, I'm interested in that. Even if they are using the pooled version right now, they were not that interested in the pooled version in future when it says a robotaxi because you don't have the driver anymore as a kind of like a security buffer for them. That was actually one interesting point I personally didn't expect to think, but once we started to get all this response, I also feel the same way right now. Yes, the driver is gone, so I'm sharing the car with a stranger. That is changing the story. That's probably changing how these vehicles need to be designed. Another perspective, like these cars, when they are robotaxis, for instance, the cleaning. So one of the problems that we had with public transportation is the quality of the service. If individuals are not comfortable with the quality, they are actually not using that service. So if robotaxis needs to be cleaned continuously, if they can't be really, if the driver is not there to keep the car, to keep the maintenance, that is actually affecting consumer choices to use it or not.
And this is where teleoperations come to play, right? I mean, you're removing the driver, but you still have human control at some point if a sensor fails or if the autonomy is not working at any given time. So that's why I think public acceptance is important, and it's important to also design a system, a teleoperation system or an AV system, that creates that comfort. And it's an education piece for the passengers
And on the commercial delivery side of it, is that something where you're seeing a lot of interest just because of the shortage of like truck drivers and things like that?
Absolutely. And it's not just the short, it's the strenuous activity that it involves, right, with trucking. So that's why I fundamentally believe that AV will be first in trucking and also teleoperations in other industries like mining, agriculture, and then also with trucking.
Adoption versus excitement is a big difference. And I think excitement right now with the public and even with a lot of the companies is with the automated vehicle for passengers. I think a lot of the business opportunities right now are absolutely with trucks and delivery and package delivery and even just parking a truck. You know, there's situations where the driver drives to the place, but then the truck gets parked by a teleoperator or an automated parker. But so I think the reason we focus here is that I do think a lot of autonomous and mobility discussion for our entire culture really is being driven by these promises for greater good. You talked about safety, the lack of congestion, and I think that's where our interest lies is you know, and also convenience. And so one of the questions I tried to talk about a little in this panel, I think there's a lot more talk to go, is that's what the excitement's coming, at least in a good part, from this greater good, you know, good for the public. But business is always going to be driving it. And are the two absolutely codependent? I don't think they are. I think you can have a thing where a lot of people are making a lot of money and none of those promises actually come through. I hope that's not the case, but congestion is the one we kind of looked at a little bit. You can have all those taxis and people making money off of it, and it's a great business model, but it may not solve congestion unless, as you said, Ted, that we have real policy, and I think that's really important wherever it's deployed, locally, federally. We really have to be thinking about these things. And that's why, you know, something like this, I think we all agree there's not going to be robo-taxis with nobody in them for a long time. But it's important to talk about it right now and keep talking about it.
So if the question is, are we focusing too much on robo-taxis in urban areas, the answer is, the beauty of our federalized system is the answer is different for the mayor of Austin than it is for the mayor of Fort Worth. The mayor of Austin may care very much about that issue, whereas the mayor of Fort Worth may be focused on the freight issues and how to work through those. So as we work from a federal point of view, we look at how we remove barriers and improve the safety of all of these types of operations so we can have a consistent approach to all automated systems. It doesn't matter the mode of transportation. It can be transit, it can be commercial motor vehicles, it can be passenger vehicles. But if we can figure out how to prove the level of safety of these new technologies, we can allow all sorts of these operations, and we don't have to choose, because we don't favor a top-down command and control approach. We like it to be bottoms-up, and we work with our local and mayors and our state partners to remove the barriers that don't need to be there.
Yeah, so John brought up a really good point, which is there's this balance, right, of these commercial interests that are driving this, but also these sort of broader social benefits that could come out of this. At the same time, and safety is obviously right top of mind for a lot of people in this space. At the same time, you know, we've seen not only AVs crash already, we've actually seen fatalities. Is there a point at which, things have maybe been too lax and we sort of allowed these things to happen? Because then potentially, right, you have a situation that we've seen with the public, perception of autonomous vehicles has changed a lot just over the last year or so. Is there a point at which we run the risk of those social benefits being lost in sort of the rush to get there, and maybe even like people having incentives to cut corners to get there?
I don't think we're rushing anymore. I think we used to rush, and then this year at CES, there was a revelation. We came back and talk about ADAS, everybody. Yes. So I think companies now are getting smarter about taking back, okay, we're going to go full autonomy in 2021. We're not going to have steering wheel and gas pedals and brakes in 2021. And it's going to be mass deployment of AVs. And I think companies are taking a step back and doing wanting to do things right. But again, I think there's a progression that has to happen. And this is where you look at state of California, who is now mandating a human driver to be able to take control over a car, right, in case of a sensor failure or whatnot. And that's where, again, teleoperation comes to play. But I think we will see a progression. I don't think we have full AVs on the road today.
We don't.
And that's something
you mean
that
without,
we have.
You mean without a human safety driver?
I don't think there is a level 5 vehicle on the road today. I think there's different flavors of level 2 on the road today. And we see the testing done in geofenced areas for a small amount of time for a limited distance. But what we've talked about is that there has to be a progression and a collective understanding that we need to do things right. We need to think about functional safety, not just smoke and mirrors. We need to think about user experiences. We need to think about how do we understand the passengers, the person driving the car, whether it's teleoperator or behind the wheel. We need to think about how do you reuse and share the data. So thanks, USDOT, for the US the grant initiative. So I think collectively we are looking at working together rather than individually.
So Finch, I don't know if you can talk about this, but kind of jumping a little bit on Ed's point, which is the innovation at what cost. So then what's the role of the federal government? Is it dictated by an administration? Let's say you set out a policy, or is the stance right now to allow it to play out legislatively? Or, of course, you could do it also in the courts, depending on what happens. So what is the right now? What is the perspective? And has that changed over the last, 4 years?
Mm-hmm. So what we're really facing is a tragedy of the common situations among industry partners. If anybody rushes to put something out that is not safe, it can bring the whole house of cards down. Mm-hmm. Now, Congress granted cities and states the ability to allow testing and demonstration operations on their roads under their own rules. So mayors can set the standards for what sort of operations can happen in their cities. We're seeing mayors and states engaging and working through what sort of operations they're comfortable with. From the federal government point of view, it drives me crazy when people say there is no framework for safety around automated vehicles. There absolutely is, and any vehicle sold in the country has to meet the current federal motor vehicle safety standards. If they want to produce at a high number, they have to come to us for an exemption, and we have received a few of those, and we're working through the process now. But safety absolutely is paramount on these types of operations, and we are partnering with our state and local partners to work through this. We have met with first responders in the past. We've worked with safety advocates in the past. This is something that, through our powers to set standards and through our powers to convene and facilitate these conversations and push out these best practices and make sure the mayors know what's in their rights and their authorities to set the standards, the types of activities for just testing and demonstrations are, I mean, we have a role to play, and this is the primary topic that we focus on.
So have you seen, I've seen it happen in the last 3 or 4 years where cities seem to finally understand what power they have. Mm-hmm. And you start to see how they're exerting that once small little authorities that find that they're the ones licensing scooters, for example, suddenly have a lot of power. Is that just happening in places like Austin and San Francisco? When you're talking to mayors and empowering cities, do they get it? Do they understand how much power they have? Or are they still worried about creating jobs and bringing companies in and just kind of opening the doors and not really thinking about that balance?
So obviously I can't speak for every mayor, but I assume they go through the same process we go through. You may feel good saying we got to get them out there, got to get them on the road. But then at night, before you make the decisions, you think through, did I make a safe decision? Am I thinking this through? Am I thinking responsibly? Because every one of those mayors know that when there is a fatality, as there have been, they are partly responsible. We all are. So you have to work with them. You have to engage with them. But I think the mayors also understand that it's on their shoulders if they act, and city council members and so on. But if they act irresponsibly, that where it's on their shoulders as well. And so I know we all worry about that as we try and bring these technologies forward. You always check yourself and think, am I doing the right thing?
Yeah, I mean, are AVs ultimately going to be sort of a locally determined sort of the form factor of them? Is that going to be a thing where, you know, certain form factors and certain even business models are going to be, you know, very local and you know, not something that can necessarily be sort of determined on a national level? And then how do companies start to navigate that then, right? I mean, do you have to just pick one city as a market and then you just kind of, is it not going to be scalable the way cars are right now?
super fragmented.
I think you're definitely going to see standardization, right? So we have Ford Motor Company is here, right? I'm sure Ford Motor Company has no interest in designing a different car for every city in the United States. Now, there's going to be some localization in trials to start, but as we go into production, the people that make things, right, are going to produce what most of the people want, and that's going to be cheaper always than what a few people want, and both will be offered, right, and then the market will decide. And that's, I mean, that's what we have now in all kinds of things, whether it be your car or your phone, right, or your furniture.
But do consumers look at these things differently on a local? Have you looked at sort of the regional differences?
We did, actually. We have conducted studies. We actually started with Austin, since I live here, perhaps. And then we moved to Houston, Dallas, Waco, San Francisco, Boston, Las Vegas, Phoenix, many different areas. And the last one was at the national level. So, yes, actually, there are some regional differences. When we first started our studies, we actually didn't recognize that regional differences much. And we didn't recognize much demographic differences. It was more about perceptions, attitudes, and what they heard from the news, what they knew how these vehicles will be deployed, and what does it mean, actually, that you have level 2, level 3, level 4. Even people were not really aware of different levels, and they were really confused with different brandings, different names. There's a lot of discussion and research studies going on right now. How should we name them? How should we define them? Whether people actually reacting differently when they hear an automated company, a car company, or they hear about these vehicles from a technology company. So there is a lot of really differences, including regional differences. One of the studies that we have conducted actually has shown, for instance, for Phoenix, they were completely disagreeing with the pooled version of ride-hailing services, where it was different for San Francisco. So we see differences because of probably their current mode of transportation, because of their current travel environment. And I personally believe that, yes, there will be some local movement because every city is different. Every city needs are different. But at the same time, these vehicles needs to be part of the overall sustainable modes of transportation. And I think they really need to, like, people, companies, policymakers, researchers, everyone needs to be connected, and data needs to be shared. Otherwise, we will not really reach to the full benefits, whether it's safety, mobility. So there needs to be more sharing in order to reach those promises.
I think if you're talking about robo-taxis per se and things that are very close to the automotive model that we already have, then there's probably standardization because Ford is going to be playing a big role, or GM or whoever. But I think if you look at mobility as a whole, and so that does include those vehicles, but all these other modes of transportation, scooters, et cetera, and then you pair that with what you said about local governments finally realizing the power they have, and by extension, local communities, you know, realizing the power they now have. Neighborhoods in San Francisco are becoming so powerful when it comes to issues of mobility. There's no way that you can envision, at least in the short term, a sort of standardized mobility form. And if you don't have that, then each automaker or robo-taxi maker is going to have to contend with. They may have maybe the same vehicle everywhere, but they're going to have to contend with those differences for a long time, I think.
Yeah. So we touched on an issue that's near and dear to our heart, which is education. And we actually have a panel later at South by Southwest that's just focused on like terminology and using the right language around automated vehicles. And especially, I think, when you get ADAS and sort of driver assistance and automation and fully automated vehicles, I mean, when those lines blur, people get confused about them because of what you call them, right, or other things, like that creates this huge potential problems. And it's something we talk a lot about on the show, and we're going to talk about more at this panel. I'm really curious, though, because like education kind of touches all the pieces of this, right? It's kind of part of how we maybe even get from a sort of regionalized thing into sort of more shared understanding and standardization. So I'm just curious that you all have a very different, come from different sectors and perspectives. I'd like to go around the circle and just sort of ask, so where do you see the big opportunities in education? And maybe like from the perspective of your company or your organization, you know, what can be done and what needs to be done in terms of educating people about automated vehicles?
So at CES, they announced a consortium, the PATH Group, for specifically to have a consortium across industry and the automakers and local agencies. So at CES, they talked about the PAVE Group. And so
Alex Enric's, and PAVE have been that, mixing it up a little joined. Bit.
Yeah. So you've been mixing it up with him.
Oh, yeah.
So I think you'll see more of those types of things, right? So everybody understands that education is important, and it's really important to get, I guess, the straight information out to the public, and I think measured ways, and as people talked about, taking steps and just moving in a logical fashion, and basically being able to talk about that and have a forum to be able to talk about it. So again, we don't have the house of cards falling down because of one misstep. And so having groups to be able to work together and coordinate the communication, I think, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And so, and there's also a bunch of stakeholders, right? So like, you know, the media needs to be educated, consumers need to be educated, but cities need to be educated too. And I think that's some, one of the things that, that INRIX does a little bit of is sort of help working with cities to prepare for some of this
right.
stuff,
so
right?
So INRIX works with a lot of cities and DOTs, and education is part of it. And, you know, it's a big challenge keeping up with technology, right?
Tell me about it, yeah.
You know, one of the things I talk about, because I thought about it as we were actually sitting up on the panel, right? So February 1st is actually my 35th anniversary of being in a transportation engineer. Right? So I've been in this a little while now. And so one of the things, when I was director of traffic operations for a state DOT and I was on research panels, one of the things that I harped on continually was that our model for research doesn't fit technology. Our biggest need for research is in technology, and we absolutely have got this broken model where we think about what the problems are. We spend 6 months trying to find what the problem statement is, and another 6 months trying to fund the research, and then a year doing the research. And then 2 years after we have the question, we get a paper published that tells us what the thoughts are. Meanwhile, technology has completely moved on, right? And so that is a huge challenge for the transportation industry in general, and especially for government, right, who is trying to think about answers, because this has been one of the key ways that they've worked in the past, right? And so involving industry and consortiums is part of that answer. I think rethinking how we kind of fund and do research on faster cycles is another thing we need to look at.
John, can I jump in?
Yeah, just real quick. I just think that taking it from a completely different angle, that maybe the most important work being done on educating the public in terms of autonomy is ADAS. The fact that ADAS is now on your vehicle when you buy it, some form of it, and if you get used to it and you use it, I think your research also supports this, Vivek, is if you get in the car and you have it and you experience it, you start to accept it, you want to adopt it, you will be open to more of it. And so, I mean, we can talk about, does the public understand 4 versus 5? But in some ways, it's moot, because there is no real 4 or 5 right this minute. So, but I think they'll be more prepared a generation in with ADAS and my parents already have moved way down that road.
Alex is looking very, you know, riled up, but yeah. Before he's pumped up. Before he asks this question, is there a role, though? Is it enough to educate? Do you need to have an enforcer to enforce bad terminology? Anyone can answer this question.
That's
Everyone's
Alex.
Looking very silent.
I just want to say one thing. We have to start developing a common language. We really, because we are all talking about probably similar things, but with different language. We are all coming from different countries. We are all coming from different backgrounds. We have to really start talking about the same language. Otherwise, it's becoming more, the data is polluted. And that has really negatively affected people. It's actually very true based on our studies. When people know about it, when people understand better, we actually don't start with talking with different levels. We first show them a video. These are what we mean by this level, and then we start to ask them questions. Otherwise, whatever we ask is completely different than whatever they understand. And this is the same for us. Like I was saying the same thing in the panel. We keep changing the definitions. We keep changing the names of technologies. We really need to start educating everyone, including ourselves.
Standardizing language. It's also the education. The education has to happen within a company when it comes to how do you develop a product, right? What kind of product are you putting out there? What is real versus what is PowerPoint? What is video? What is marketing stunt?
Right, but what you could do, another approach is, which I know you're not an advocate of, but you could, if you were like a big free marketer, just allow the market to decide, and a company that's irresponsible will ultimately fail. That's not the safest approach, but that is an approach. That is a mindset that some folks have.
But that's what happened in Arizona, and they've kind of swung way back the other direction.
Right, but in that case, it actually worked.
Bird crash is almost a year old, and it's pretty obvious to me that the reason that Uber has not been criminally prosecuted is because no DA down there had a piece of paper they could look at to explain what systems engineering is and say, boy, these guys blew it.
Yeah, but look at what the fallout was. They shut everything down, and they really are barely back. So if you were to, again, I'm not advocating for it, but if you want to look at the realities of what the market realities were, is that it swung to the extreme other side. And I'm not saying that it's been solved, but certainly when it comes to Uber ATG, they're not really doing much right now. It's kind of... It was handled in a way.
Right. But these swings ideally, you know, eventually find the middle, the sweet spot in the middle.
It's not ideal to do that.
Has Tesla found the sweet spot?
No comment. read my book.
I'm going to go get a burrito. That sounded like a great episode that I missed. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, we're actually kind of getting close to needing to wrap up. But if everyone...
Were there any more points on like the education piece of this? Any specific thoughts or ideas on standardization of language?
I think there's an absolute need for it. And thanks, Alex, and you guys for pushing this. Thanks, Pave. But I think the public expects things to happen, and there's a certain demand for autonomy. There's certain demand for things to be easy, seamless. But again, we need to be smart about how we communicate it. I think also from a teleoperations perspective, we're going to see some challenges when we're going to bring a teleoperator to take over a vehicle. How do you communicate? How does the teleoperator communicate with the passengers of the shuttle? Right? What does the user experience look like? This is something that we at Designated Driver are looking at from day one. It's not trivial. How does the car interact with the infrastructure, and how do you call that? Right. So it's an absolute important thing to think about, much more than, okay, am I going to have level 5 tomorrow? No. The most important question is, how are we calling this thing?
Yeah. John?
Well, I was going to say it's kind of hard to take, you know, to put language to something that's so clearly a spectrum, right? It's
right.
Not as though there's clearly stage one, stage two. There's all this in between, and I think and it's all being developed. It's not like we got to stage two and technology stopped looking at that, and now we're looking at three. There's innovation being made at every single level, and then we're trying to come up with definitions, and I think that is a goal, and we should try to have terminology, but I think the terminology will also eventually evolve. And emanate from what becomes reality. And so it's kind of hard to like do it ahead of time.
Yep.
You need to have that commonality, but no, it's going to change probably.
Yeah. So to bring Finch into this, I've been personally like a bit critical of the federal level, how some of this has been managed. But I will say, actually, one of the things I really like about what's happening on the federal level, and I kind of just wish it were strengthened a little bit more maybe, is the idea of the safety letters, right? Of basically having the companies that want to deploy any kind of automated drive system to just say, here's what it is, here's what it isn't, we're on the record, everybody knows. Because frankly, to me, I think where a lot of the problems have come from has just been from confusion, right? It's not even that people are necessarily overselling something, it's that there's confusion about what this really is. And so that's something I really like. Would you say that's like sort of the cornerstone of the federal approach at this point? Or?
Yeah, certainly the sharing of information is vitally important. And right now we have 11 companies that have submitted those self-safety assessments. But really, that's the starter step to where we're going. Because as you look at that, where they talk through their approach to safety, their approach to operations, how they address the 12 areas that we highlight in our Automated Driving Systems 2.0 guidance document, they have to put up or shut up when it comes time to get part of the $60 million in ADS demonstration grants, whose application window closes on March 21st. They have to put up or shut up when they request an exemption, and they have to prove to us, and it has to go out for public comment, that they are addressing all these safety needs and that they can operate at the level of human safety or above the level of human safety. The voluntary self-safety assessments are a step towards a bigger thing. It's starting the groundwork. It's helping to so we can gather these bits of data and we can find commonalities, and so that we can push that out to the industry. They are working with each other through multiple mechanisms to figure out what's working, how are these being approached. It is not the whole story, but it is a key early component to building out to something greater.
Cool. Well, I thank you guys all so much for taking the time to chat with us. It's been really, really fascinating. And I apologize for Alex.
Especially, get out of here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, everyone.